Hi there, House Culture listener. If you enjoy this episode or have enjoyed listening to other episodes in our series, please support and donate to us through the Acast supporter feature. All donations will help us create the content that you love listening to. You can decide how much you give and there's no regular commitment. So it could be a one-off and every now and then or once every time you listen. It's up to you. Click on the supporter link that you can find in the episode or show description, and with Google or Apple Pay, it will take you less than 30 seconds to make your payment.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Guy Williams, and you're listening to the House Culture Podcast.
House Culture.
Hello everybody, and welcome to the penultimate episode in this third season of the House Culture Podcast, hosted by me, the managing editor of House Culture, Matt Rouse. I hope that you're all good and have maybe had a chance to soak up some dance floor vibes now that we are re-emerging into clubs and festivals after an enforced period away. Is it better than before? Everyone seems so much more appreciative and in the moment, which you love to see. So, thanks for tuning in today and welcome to the podcast. We are House Culture, a collective of house music fans who have come together through their mutual love of the beat to celebrate the spirit of house music. Not only can you enjoy our daily output of positive vibes on Instagram at HouseCultureNet, you can also get crate digging through our archive of previous guests on the podcast. We have gathered a rich oral history of the scene, featuring icons such as Fatboy Slim, David Morales and Danny Tenaglia, and leaders of the new school of talent like Andrea Oliva, Anya Schneider and Josh Butler. Whatever your era is, we have you covered. But our conversations don't just stop there. As we are House Culture, we like to investigate every element of what makes up this scene. And that is why we've also spoken to people like Manumission founding member and Pikes Hotel creative director Dawn Hindle, saxophone sensation Lovely Laura, and South Wales premier promoter Dave Jones. Honestly, if you don't recognise the name, have a listen as we handpick all of our guests to make sure they have a fascinating story to tell. Now, are you ready for this one? We're speaking to someone who, through their time in Manchester, honed their DJ skills at places like the Hacienda before moving to London and holding residencies at legendary places like Trade, now residing in Ibiza and running their own DJ agency and consultancy, alongside still playing clubs and festivals, of course. It is the man known as Guy Williams. In our chat, you'll hear Guy talk about the passion that still drives him after all these years.
I have always been more passionate about the music than the popularity or even wealth side of it. I buzz off the music and that original kind of feeling of how that brings everyone together. I still feel that now, 30 years on.
What his opinion is on the state of the scene right now.
We undoubtedly seem to be going through a summer of love again now, because it's like, you know, we're out of lockdown and, you know, it's definitely back. The industry's back. And I think that's just that's giving people like a massive creative spark.
And where his house music happy place is.
I'm probably a disco and house boy at heart. I've always said that I wish I was 18 in 78 in New York. But I'd say I'm probably happiest playing a Jackie and Acid House, Deep House set. And that's probably where I'm at my happiest.
This one was recorded face to face, the first one for a while. It was good to be back in the room with my guest. And as you'll hear, it took place in a very unique location. I hope you enjoy it. This is Guy Williams.
House Culture.
Hi, I'm currently sat in the Boat Pod, which is a beautiful podcast recording studio housed in a canal boat in London's Little Venice. And opposite me is a man who has done it all in dance music. He's partied and played at legendary nights at Manchester's Hacienda, hosted and promoted nights at the iconic Pikes Hotel in Ibiza, and he has made music his business by setting up and running his own DJ agency and consultancy called Paradise Productions. His name is Guy Williams, and it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be on the Boat Pod podcast.
Absolutely. It's this amazing space, isn't it?
It's great. It's a really ingenious idea, turning a barge into a kind of a studio, I suppose, because there's decks in here to record mixes and everything.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the quirkiest places I've recorded in. So definitely cool to chat to you today. So we always like to start at the beginning with our interviews and find out like where a person grew up and how they first got into music. So you're originally from Manchester, is that right?
Yes, I'm a Manchester boy. So I grew up in and around various areas of Manchester, and was lucky enough to be 18 in 1988.
Awesome.
Which was a pivotal time. So, and even before that, you know, like the kind of the 80s vibe and, you know, the whole new romantic movement, which I was a fully fledged member of with my long fringe, Phil Oakey style. So grew up in Manchester and then at age 16, started going to college in central Manchester as well.
Yeah.
And was surrounded by what became like, well, I suppose it was the gay village at the time, Canal Street. That's where the college was. So, you know, you used to go in for like morning lectures and then not make the afternoon ones because you'd be sat in the pub. And of course, then started going out at that time around 86, 87. And we all kind of know what happened around 88, 89.
Yeah.
With the Hacienda and there's another club that we used to go to called the Number One Club, which was a tiny basement off St. Peter's Square. And it was a proper family. I mean, I met some lifelong friends in there.
Yeah.
So like a perfect clubbing week in like 88, 89 would be the Number One on a Saturday and the Hacienda on a Friday and maybe a Tuesday and a Wednesday as well.
Partying all week. And I mean, just before that kind of clubbing started for you, were you into music before that teenage period?
Yeah, my father actually worked for a number of different record companies. So Chrysalis and Arista, which, I mean, big artists that were on Chrysalis was Blondie.
Yeah.
And also Two Tone was an offshoot of Chrysalis and Arista. So with the whole ska thing, which was, you know, in school even, like the kids in the year above me were all like Teddy Boy scars, and I used to sell the merch. I used to nick merch and sell it at school. And so it was, you know, I was kind of surrounded by music from an early age and had a record collection from the age of 8.
Wow.
So
was this stuff you were buying or was it?
Yeah. Well, because my dad worked in the industry, he used to say, write a list of whatever you want every week. And so he would come home with a plastic bag full of vinyl each week from around 78, 79.
Amazing. So what things were you kind of writing down at that point? Was it just stuff that you liked, or looking back were you like, actually I had some pretty good taste, or was it all kind of poppy stuff?
In that 78, 79 period, there was Blondie, The Police, ABBA, a lot of the big pop stuff that actually is great music. And then when we kind of got into 81, 82 and the kind of synth revolution took hold and the new romantic movement started, I just found a real affinity with that. Thompson Twins, Human League, because my dad also then left Chrysalis and went to work for Virgin, who Human League were on. So I was their number one fan and had every 7-inch, 12-inch picture disc, poster, everything.
Yeah.
Eurythmics, all those guys. And I asked my parents for synthesizers. I think that was Christmas 83 or birthday 84.
Yeah.
So I had like a Roland SH-101, which is like really revered now.
Yeah.
And a Yamaha keyboard and a drum machine. And I think my mum and dad really regretted that, because I used to drive them crazy not being very good on it.
So, I mean, you were just getting this stuff and just tooling around with it. And, you know, and then you say you kind of went to college and you're very much into that new romantic scene.
Yeah, and going out, like Manchester was really, you know, like from kind of 86, 87, there was a real buzz in Manchester. Mm. And of course, that developed into Madchester, which unfortunately into Gunchester. But, you know, that it was really exciting to be there at that time and very inspiring. And so I was clubbing probably at least two or three times a week with a full-time job. The energy of youth. So, I was doing that probably 88, 89, 90, and then when it got to like 92, I then was like, right, I've got to start DJing myself. I've got this amazing record collection, and the past few years have just been living in clubs mainly, and so I started DJing, and actually I DJed for about a year without even having decks. I would just literally do it on the hop, playing in first of all, certain bars that were really cool in Manchester, like the Athenaeum and Home Nightclub, and then started to get club gigs and then bought decks.
Yeah.
And maybe in like beginning of 94.
Yeah.
And lots of after parties at ours. Yes.
It's always the way we interviewed Buckley. For this as well. And he was saying that his gig that he got at the Hacienda was because, you know, everyone would come to the after party at his place.
Right.
And, you know, Bernard Sumner would be there, or, you know, Graham Parker would be there, and they'd be like, he'd be DJing, and then a spot would open up and they'd say, well, why don't we just get him in?
It's funny how things go around, isn't it? Because actually when I moved to Ibiza, I moved in with Buckley,
no way.
So for the first year we were flatmates, which was fun. A lot of shared history and a lot of, oh, have you heard this, have you got this.
There was a bit of that when I went round to his flat, actually. It was quite funny. And so I mean, just to rewind a bit, you were obviously going to Hacienda as a punter. Did you realize at that point that something was happening, that there was a whole movement being born?
I did. It's funny actually, because quite recently Defected showed a clip. There was a program called The Hitman and Her in the 80s, which was Pete Waterman and Michaela Strachan. They used to take it around various clubs in the Northwest and play the chart music, but kind of more the dance side of it. And it was quite cheesy, and they'd do places like Hippos in Warrington and, you know, that kind of vibe. But they actually came to the Hacienda, and it was in January 89.
Yeah.
So I was 18 and a half. Mm-hmm. I'd been going to the Hacienda a bit through 86, 87, 88, but more the number one club that I mentioned earlier. But I remember this night, and instead of when the Hitman and Her would go to, say, Hippos in Warrington, the flyer would say Hippos in Warrington experiences Hitman and Her. Mm-hmm. But they flipped it for the Hacienda, and it was Hitman and Her experiences the Hacienda, which that flyer is genius. Yeah. So I was there that night, and it was chaos getting in. I mean, I remember like a girl got her arm broken in the crush. Oh, the bouncers were throwing us into the club.
Yeah.
But it was filmed because they were always broadcast. So there's a few shots of me on the dance floor. And actually this clip that Defected showed recently, and it's of 10 City, That's the Way Love Is. Mm-hmm. And it's a very young 18 year old guy it's weird because I'm dressed in, like, there's a few people who you can tell have discovered ecstasy, and they're on the podiums doing like the acid dance, and then there's like us that haven't discovered it. And I was in like a smart white shirt with trousers, you know, with proper trousers on, doing like, you know, a bit of a kind of a dance, but like 6 months later it all changed. So that was kind of, I knew something was happening, but I didn't quite know. But then by the June of 89, I jumped right in.
And were you listening to the records and being like, okay, I've obviously got a vinyl collection already, I want to go out there and try and source these records that I'm enjoying here in the club? Or was it just
up until that kind of 89, I was still getting records that I liked, and I was hearing some of the early house stuff as well. But it was really later on when, you know, the whole kind of, yeah, the whole ecstasy explosion and all of that, where you just become like a kind of a disciple to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, my record collection carried on expanding.
Do you still own a lot of vinyl?
No. Do you know what? I've moved around in London quite a bit, and just having like 30 odd boxes of vinyl is a bind. If you don't have somewhere, like, you know, you know if you have your own home and you have a room to put it in and you're there for years, it's different. But I've been a bit of a nomad, so I ended up selling most of it. I've kept the vinyl of the records I've made and maybe about 50 faves.
Yeah,
but I did sell the majority of it. Do you know what? I don't really regret it.
Yeah,
because I've got like most of what I want from then is on digital, you know, and two USB sticks are a lot lighter.
Absolutely, yeah. Turn up to a gig with two record boxes or whatever.
And hence the bad back, you know, like after doing that for, you know, whatever. I mean, I DJed for nearly 30 years, and so 20 of that was lugging those boxes around. Yeah. And yeah, it's definitely not good for the old posture.
No. So tell me about, you've bought the decks, you know, you've been DJing, turning up, just doing it on the hop, and then you've bought the decks, you've been teaching yourself. Did you have any kind of mentors?
No, I've been teaching myself. I actually used to, right back at the beginning in like 93, I DJed with someone else, and we were a duo, and we were called Planet Janet.
Okay. You're grinning. Is that
well? It's just a funny. It's a funny time. It was a funny time, and the way that name came about, because it was like, oh wow, last night was great. I was on Planet Janet, and you know, it wasn't actually linked to Janet Jackson, because there was a link there as well. And so we were two guys. We weren't drag DJs, which was quite popular at the time as well in the early 90s. But I think sometimes people would book us and expect something different, and then these two kind of pretty ordinary lads would turn up but rock it.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that lasted for about a year and a half, and then it just felt natural to kind of go. We kind of took little different paths, and I went solo in 95. But it, you know, we would encourage each other, and you know, I'll practice on my decks and look what records I've bought this week, and you know, so that went on for like the first year and a half or so.
Yeah. And what did you realize at that point, that this was going to be, hang on, I can make a career of this?
I think you know by then the DJs that we were going out to see regularly, like Sasha and people like that, had started to become like huge, and so it was all of a sudden, it was like, this could turn into something either big or have longevity in it. I did feel like that. I mean, I've always just been, I don't want to sound cliche, but I have always been more passionate about the music than the popularity or even wealth side of it.
Yeah.
I've always been more, I buzz off the music and that original kind of feeling of how that brings everyone together. Yeah. And that's, I still feel that now, 30 years on.
Yeah, and I think sometimes the best nights are, that I find as well, is when you go somewhere, it's not necessarily the big name that delivers. It's always the residents. I love the warm-up, that ease into the night.
And that's not, you know, and talent. That's not like, that's a skill, you know, to be able to do that. I mean, I've had some great residences in London over the years. DTPM at Fabric and the End, Trade at Turn Mills, Fiction at the Cross, you know, Ministry of Sound, but particularly DTPM, Trade and Fiction, which were run by Lawrence Mallis and Lee Freeman. They were very much about the programming and the music rather than just sticking a DJ on. And that's why those clubs became infamous, because, you know, it was always really well programmed with great DJs and great music. And so it was a great kind of training ground. And now, you know, years on, after those clubs have gone, there's still, you know, obviously we've just been through a pandemic, but pandemic aside, there are still some great club nights and stuff. But I know that when I put events on myself, that kind of thinking about the music and how it builds and everything is very much part of it.
Yeah.
And I think that I think that needs to happen more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I think we could, I've got some questions later. I really want to come into about, you know, how you kind of put on a night and whatever, and we can dig into that. And so, let's talk about flesh at the Hacienda. How did you manage to get yourself in there? You Buckley corrected me on this. There were no resident DJs at the Hacienda. They were just regular DJs. Is that something you would adhere to, or would you say you were a resident?
I know. I'd say there were residents. Yeah. Okay. I mean, like at Flesh, Tim Lennox and Kath McDermott and Paulette were definitely, I'd say, residents. I'd say I was more of a regular guest.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, you know, like I you know, those were my peers. I mean, like, you know, before I kind of started DJing, a bit before that, Paulette was already DJing, and we would go to her gigs, which were like family gigs anyway, all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. It's great that we've got that sort of real long-standing history, and the fact that we're still at it. But I feel like, yes, there were residents. I mean, funnily enough, actually, on a Hacienda live stream in lockdown, Paulette played, mm-hmm. and she actually held up a card and said, "Here's to the Flesh residents." And had Tim and Kath, and, yeah. and she actually had me in on there. But I was a regular guest.
Yeah.
But it was like acknowledging those people, those DJs that were the residents that, you know, very often helped build it more than any guests did.
Yeah.
I think with Flesh, I was going right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. It was like something from outer space. Like, it was a Wednesday night. It started in 91, I think. And obviously, I'd been going to the Hacienda a lot in 89 on Fridays to Nude and in 1990. But they were having a lot of problems then, you probably mm-hmm. know of, mm-hmm. with violence. Manchester was in general. And it closed down for 6 months, I think, in 90. Yeah. And then in 91, I kind of had really kind of stopped going at the weekends, but then Flesh started and it was the last Wednesday of the month.
Yeah.
And the first one, I think 800 people went to the first one, and then it was 1,500 to 2,000 went every month. And it was so exciting, really liberating. People would be like, they'd walk out of Flesh and be planning what they were going to wear and do for the next Flesh a month later. It was that much of a big deal for us. And so that started in like 91, and like I said, I didn't really start DJing until the year after. And then I think I probably first played in 93 and played some guest spots with David as Planet Janet. It was as Planet Janet we played through, I think, 93 94. But yeah, amazing days.
What's an outstanding memory from that?
Straight away, because it's I've been asked this before. There was one time when me and David were playing down in the Gay Traitor, which was the amazing bar downstairs. Mm-hmm. And there was a DJ called DJ Barbie, who was a drag DJ, friend of ours from Sheffield, and she was supposed to play after us. And basically it was snowing that night, and I think we were due off in like half an hour, and me and David decided to indulge a little.
Mm-hmm.
And then Paul Cons, who ran the night, came up to us and was like, "Barbie's stuck in a snowdrift on the Snake Pass. She's not gonna make it. Can you play all night?" And we were like, not really. we did, but it was a beautiful mess. Let's just say, letting records run out, putting records on twice, but actually the crowd really going with us and cheering at all the mistakes as well as all the amazing tunes. So that was a particularly funny memory. Yeah.
Well, yeah, just getting loose like that is sometimes unexpected from a crowd point of view as well, to hear like DJs just being like, "I'm just going to play stuff." That
was there was definitely something's changed here. Vibe, yeah, for sure.
Awesome. And I mean, we're talking before the mics came on as well, about Ibiza, which is where you reside now. Just take us through the the move there, but I suppose before we get to the move there, what was your experiences with the island leading up to, you know, what was your first experience on that island?
I first went in 94 with my friend Darren, and obviously just from the minute I stepped off the plane, could feel that that energy that everyone talks about, which is definitely there. And yeah, just had an amazing week, or how, I think we were there for a week. Went to Privilege and Amnesia and Space, and was just blown away by it. And yeah, so I then went regularly. I think I went just once in 94, but then I think from 95 I'd go like a couple of times, and that as the years went on, it built up to like three times a year. Spent a lot of money going over. But obviously I'd started DJing, so just before I went. So for me, I'd started DJing in Manchester and Sheffield and Leeds a bit, and then went to Ibiza, and I suppose that was part of what spurred me on even more.
Yeah.
Because it was like, this was the Holy Grail, and this is kind of something to work towards. I didn't actually first DJ in Ibiza till 2000. So it was 6 years after I first went.
Yeah.
And
Why was that? Was it always, I wanted to keep it at
I think I had a lot going on. Like, I became quite busy DJing UK from mid-90s, and I moved to London in 97 and went to work for Jive as promotions manager, and then defected. So it that kind of period between 94 and 2000 was a lot going on, but I was still going to Ibiza regularly. And then I think by 2000 I was already a resident for Trade and Ministry, and they would and Matinee, I think, and they were all teaming up and doing stuff together. So I think my first ever trip was, I think, to DJ was 2000, and it was to play El Divino, the Terrace at Space, and somewhere else I can't remember. It was an, it was a pretty amazing first trip, DJ trip.
I mean, was there a lot of expectation on yourself in terms of, I've been there, I've experienced this? From the dance floor perspective, did you feel a pressure to really kind of deliver?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, from that late 80s acid house explosion through the 90s was when, like, dance music really did explode. So there was a real excitement, but there was also, like, you know, well, you were seeing DJs become, like, huge stars, if that's, I mean, that's a horrible word, but, like, you know, just, you just, the whole thing became huge. And, so, you know, you would go and you would hear like one of your favorite DJs on the Terrace at Space, and then all of a sudden you're doing that, and you're like, well, I've got to give the crowd the experience that I've been given here. So that does weigh on your shoulders a bit, but, you know, it is also, it is, it's not, you know, it's not the most, it's not the worst job in the world. but there definitely is a pressure, and there is a pressure in general in the industry, which sometimes people don't realize, and that, you know, can turn into mental health issues and stuff, which I know has been highlighted a lot more, especially in recent years. But you know, you are performing, and I think that as the art form has become such a gigantic entity, that, you know, there's more pressure on it as an art form.
And That pressure as well, when you're approaching a set for a big gig or a big event that you're, you know, is on the horizon, how do you approach building what you're going to play? Or do you just freestyle it? Do you have a beginning, middle, and end?
I generally freestyle it more than plan it. Obviously I have like a loose plan, but it's kind of a bit like my life, really. It's a little bit, you know, winging it. But yeah, I think because it's good to not be so rigid, because you don't know, sometimes, even if it's somewhere you play regular, you can have a different crowd or a bit of a different vibe. So it's good to kind of be a bit loose and to be able to. And I think that that is also part of the art. That's again, it's like we were talking before about the warming up. That's a skill. Yeah. And another part of it that's skill is properly reading and being able to switch things to take people on that journey. Again, another cliche, but like, that is definitely a skill that some have better than others.
Yeah, yeah. And there's nothing worse than thinking, oh, I've got this tune, everyone's going to love it, and the vibe is just completely wrong. And even if you do play it and, you know, dare to play it, it sometimes can...
And, you know, look, in all the hundreds of thousands of gigs I've done, that's happened a few times where I've been, like, really excited about a new tune and the crowd haven't been. Or sometimes what's happened is I've just been a bit ahead of the curve and then a few weeks or a month later, everyone's going mad for it. And I'm like, you didn't really like it. But anyway, you know, generally, yeah, I think an important part of the art is being able to read the room.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were talking as well before the mics came on about Pike's Hotel and, you know, the heritage that that place has got on the island. You obviously program and run the Flash series of events on that. How did that come about, and what was the thinking behind putting that on? And
Well, I've been, I've loved Pike's for many years, and actually been DJing there for about 13 or so years.
Mm-hmm. So you've seen it change from what it was initially to where it is now.
Seen it change, and obviously as Tony got more, a bit more kind of sick and less abled, and then of course Andy and Dawn, who are very old friends of mine, came in and bought it and managed it and then bought it, and that was a kind of a great stars aligning, because obviously they have really kept the original vibe but spruced it up, in a tasteful way. And then back 4 years ago, when I was really itching to get out of London, and I went to Ibiza for a month. It was the longest. I was doing the music for some weddings in Ibiza and Mallorca. So I did a full month, and that was the longest I'd ever, I think I'd only ever done a 2 week stint before. And I was like, right, after a month, it really feels like home more than ever. And I was having dinner with Sarah Broadbent, who's the event manager at Pike's, and her and Mike used to run We Love It Space, you know. They've done great things on the island. And I was having dinner with Sarah, and I said, I've decided I'm definitely moving. And she was like, great, finally. I think we've got a bottle of champers in. We probably would have done that anyway. And then it took me a few months then to sort things out, and I moved in the April. But at that dinner, she was also like, you know, you need to come and do your own thing at Pike's, go away and have a think about it. And I just thought that there was a gap for a kind of a mixed party, because the kind of gay mix scene in Ibiza had eroded somewhat, diminished a bit, and some of the big parties weren't on anymore, and some of them had got a bit too commercial as well. You know, and obviously there's Ibiza Town, which has like some bars and stuff, but in terms of like an actual like cool party, and also Pike's has always been like kind of open, everyone's welcome, but there hadn't really been a kind of gay mixed party, and so I thought that's what it's got to be, something at Pike's. Maybe we start off monthly, which is what we did in 2018 with and then it was coming up with the name, and I was obviously, we were talking about Flesh before, and so I was throwing things around. And actually, I had a Zoom with a friend of mine, and he's like, he's German, so like his English is good, but like he's sometimes like, and he thought I said Flash when I was like, and he was like, oh, I love it, Flash, and you could do really lovely logo, and I said no Flash, and it was literally, that's how it was a mistake, and that's how it came about. And obviously, you know, it's probably an ode to Flesh in part, and to DTPM and Trade and all those clubs that I was involved with a lot. But at Pikes and in Ibiza.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And that journey's taken you to that point. And you know, we have been talking around it in terms of warming up and those types of things, and setting the right tone and vibe. You know, if you're booking or programming an evening, how do you go about picking the right? Is it a real task to pick the right personalities and sounds to be able to create that? Or
yeah, how I think that's
take us through that.
I think that's also part of it. You know, like having good residents again, mm-hmm. back to the residents thing. And, you know, like I have a couple of guys that play for me and girls, John Jack and Sam, who, you know, they're great music selectors and, you know, they're good at reading a vibe, but they're also versatile in yeah. that they can play a totally Balearic chill out set,
yeah.
A disco set or a great house set.
Yeah.
And that's because that I like to do that myself. I kind of look for that in others
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
You know, there are people that just do one thing and do it really well, and that's yeah. fine. But I think that's part of the reason why I love doing stuff at Pikes, because we get to start off by the pool mm-hmm. and do, you know, and set a kind of Balearic, funk, disco, chill out, vibe mm-hmm. and then we can move to the terrace and start off with some kind of slow house new disco and build it up mm-hmm. so that, again, going back to that whole journey thing yeah. is able to be played out there.
Yeah completely. And
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Creating that as well, obviously the pandemic's happened and, you know, things have been put on hold. What do you think the kind of future holds for, not necessarily that party in particular, but for the industry at large in terms of, you know, we were talking before the mics came on about kind of some kind of anxiety about large crowds and things like that. Do you think that there will be more of a want for people to have more smaller, intimate underground parties? Or do you think everyone's going to want to come out and explode again and just go nuts?
Well, I don't know. It's interesting, isn't it? Because then also the smaller underground parties are people like, more people crushed in like sardines, mm-hmm. yeah. which I think that's partly what's driving a lot of the anxiety, whether it be from the customers or all DJs or artists, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know obviously at Pikes we've not had Freddy's the club room open, yeah. which is an amazing room, but it is, you are like cramped in there when it's busy. And it actually has been really nice playing outside. Mm-hmm. And actually the kind of original Ibiza essence when Coup and Privilege and Amnesia didn't have roofs on,
yep.
Space Terrace, all of that. So it's like, that's why I think there's a buzz at Pikes in particular at the moment. And I'm sure hopefully before the end of the season, maybe by September, we'll be out to some of the other places like the Zoo Project and, you know, we'll be able to open once more people are vaccinated, etc. Yeah. So I don't know. I think, like, look at the festivals that have happened just in the past few weeks, like Wilderness, except, you know, they've been sold out. The atmosphere's looked amazing. Yeah. However, I have looked at some of the videos, and of course, I'm really pleased that that's happening, and that, you know, people are able to go out and express themselves and dance, and my colleagues can work again. Mm-hmm. But I am a bit like, whoa, because I'm a little bit claustrophobic with crowds anyway.
Yeah.
So even before the pandemic, like with Carnival, for instance, or the gay prides, I'd love being part of it and DJing at them, but I didn't ever really like being in the crowds. That's a personal thing.
Yeah.
I always felt like, I don't know if it's because I soak up a lot of that energy and I feel it's a bit of a head spin. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. The next few weeks will be interesting for me, being back doing like kind of busy club and festival gigs.
Yeah.
I'm hoping I'm just going to be like, embrace it and be like, yeah, and not like want to run away and hide.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned there as well about how Freddy's at Pikes has not been open, and this, you know, it's opened up the hotel a bit more. Do you think that, obviously that's a positive. Do you think that will be a new normal kind of moving forwards?
I don't know. I think what may happen, I mean, I'm sure Freddy's, if not open in September, will be back open for next season.
Yeah.
It's Freddy's old bedroom. That's a magic space within a magic space.
Yeah. On a magic island.
On a magic island, on the magic roundabout. But I think it works really well.
Yeah.
There's a whole new DJ booth on the terrace. So maybe it will work in tandem. Maybe Freddy's will be open and full on club vibes, and it will be more like poolside chill out vibes on that terrace. That could work really well.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how it evolves.
Yeah. And yeah, I think always continually evolving is what's going to keep it fresh and whatever. You mentioned about the stars aligning for Andy and Dawn to take over Pikes. When we interviewed Dawn for this podcast, it was really interesting to get her side of that story. And it was literally about stars aligning. Did you see it happening from afar and think these are the perfect?
I did a podcast with Dawn, the Pikes podcast, which if you've not listened to, it's called Made in Manchester. I'm giving it a plug. But it's like mine, it's kind of part of the story I'm telling now, but mm-hmm. also how it intertwines with Dawn's. Because Manumission started in my friend's pub. Mm. And he was the manager. He was my flatmate and he was the manager. Came home one night, showed me a flyer. We were like, what's that? It's crap name. It's probably going to be rubbish. And then, you know, went on to move to a club in the gay village and became like this Friday night sensation in the summer of 93. And then because of the gang violence, they had problems and they moved it to Ibiza. That's the short version. But like I was without wanting to sound, you know, big headed, was there right from the beginning with that one. And so it's been great to see that evolve. And it's been great to see like, you know, like what Dawn and Andy have done with Ibiza Rocks. Mm-hmm. And then I knew that Tony was, like I said, was struggling more with his health and what have you. And it was like, someone's got to swoop in. Because I know even like friends of mine were like, love to buy. We were all like, let's, you know, we'd love to buy Pikes.
Yeah.
And then those guys stepped in. And I think that was definitely, you know, having Dawn as creative director was a good move.
Yeah. And from what she told me about, you know, just refreshing everything, you know, lots of dark wood and just changing that. Yeah, I think it's done really, it's been done. Yeah.
Tastefully.
Tastefully is the word I'm searching for.
Respectfully.
Yes. Yeah. I want to talk about Paradise Productions. So you're officially in the music business yourself. You know, you mentioned you worked for Jive and Defected and whatever. And you know, is this the first kind of thing you've set up yourself and owned?
Yes. The London timeline was Jive and then Defected and then DTPM. The club set up a record label, so I was the label manager. And that kind of took us to around, 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. And then I was, you know, I was pretty busy myself as a DJ, but then at some point around 2010, I kind of wanted to, I was doing some events and I kind of wanted to turn that into something a bit more, like a consultancy in a way.
Yeah.
So I set up, I did a night with Tom Cage Baby, actually, Tom Gandhi, and we called it Paradise 45, which was a hark back to Studio 45 and the Paradise Garage, basically. Doesn't take a detective to work that one out. And then that kind of, so we did some productions. We remixed Grace Jones as Paradise 45, the Temper Trap, a few other people, and then we did some parties, and we did like a season in Ibiza at a club called Aura, which was great, in the middle of the island. And so yeah, like Paradise Productions was born, because all of a sudden it was like, well, we're doing some nights, we're doing some productions, and for a lot of people were kind of starting to ask me for help with gigs and whatever. So it was a consultancy to start with. It kind of just evolved more into a DJ and management agency, and that's what happened. And then as we approached, like, you know, like through kind of 2015 16 17, I did work for a few other music people, and I realized in 2013 to 2015, and I realized I just didn't want to work for anyone else anymore by that point. I was in my like mid-40s, and I was like, I just want to work for myself, you know, which can be scary at times, but it's, I think it's generally more positive and more, you know, having that freedom. So yeah, and then I kind of more recently, from about 3 to 4 years ago, the agency where I was an agent for a certain number of DJs, and I started to manage some artists as well. So managing two artists and an agent to six, I think it is at the moment. And of course, like, we've all just been massively decimated. And, you know, so because it's not, I still do DJ, but part of the reason was I didn't want to hang up my headphones, but I didn't want to have to DJ as much as I was doing, especially in London. I moved to Ibiza, set up a party at Pikes. Great, who's not going to want to do that? But the agency was busy, so I was able to also do that remotely and coming back to London frequently for meetings and gigs and what have you. And then we all know what happened last year, and it just hit me and all my artists. But it's great to see it coming back to life.
It's been interesting as well to... You can almost say now you can look back on that period about how people kind of pivoted and changed what they were doing, how they were performing, how they were sharing their music with people, whether it was like stream gigs and those types of things. Where were you sitting on that kind of thing? You've mentioned you managed two artists. Were you pushing them to do stuff like that, or were you thinking
to do live streams
and just to kind of create something new out of what was going on?
The two, you know, Lula Franks and Mr. Doris, who I look after, did some great live streams. Some from London, some from Ibiza. And I think that was an important part of keeping the visibility there. And also perhaps bringing in a new audience that may not have seen them. I think that's what happened with a lot of live streams. I mean, you know, like United We Stream in Manchester did so well, raised a lot of money as well. So I personally, partly because I don't have that set up at home like some people have. I did do a couple of live streams. One was from the pool at Pikes, which was also a money raiser for food banks in Ibiza. And I did that with Artwork, who actually did his from I don't know if you ever saw that, but it was funny because he had a green screen that looks like he was at the Pikes pool, but he wasn't. He was in his parents' house in the studio they have, but with a green screen, and it was so realistic that we were getting messages like people like wanting a guest list, and there was nothing actually happening at Pikes when his bit went out, and the police actually went to Pikes to say, like, what's going on here then? And like Mika, the manager, had to show them around and was like, it's the magic of green screen. That was hilarious. So I did do a couple, but myself wasn't like, yeah, if I'd have had a setup at home, I might have done some more. But I think it was important for people to keep the hand in.
Yeah, yeah. And like you say, maintain that visibility. And yeah, you discover new audiences can discover new artists that they might not necessarily have been able to see.
Globally.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 And in terms of getting people into the DJ agency sphere and spotting talent, you know, how do you operate in that way? Are you always trying to, do you often hear people and think, oh
yeah, I mean, a bit different. Some of the guys that I work with are old friends. Mm-hmm. And some I've like heard, you know, like yeah, I mean, Lulu is a friend of a, you know, she's my daughter's friend, and, mm-hmm. and we were at a wedding and I heard her singing and I knew that she was DJing and I was like, this girl's good. You know, she's got like a real kind of great energy and talented. Yeah. And in a number of different ways.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'd love to work with her. I think it'd be great. And we've been working together for 3 years now. Yeah. And actually we're just recently coming out of the pandemic, and she's really doing really well, really busy, really in demand. And, you know, we're working on some exciting projects, and I think that's only going to grow.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Doris is like, you know, he's been an absolute like hero in Ibiza, of the, you know, used to be resident at Space, mm-hmm. used to run his own parties. He got voted best island DJ in the DJ awards. And makes a lot of great music from kind of funk and disco through to house.
Yeah.
I mean, a string of releases since last year, because he was, you know, he used his time in the lockdown to make music,
yeah.
which was one of the best things you could do with your time.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we've spoken to a lot of people over this lockdown period, and it's been interesting about how people's creative workflows have kind of changed in terms of creating something and road testing it, whether it's, you know, playing it to their husband or wife or partner, yeah. or whoever in their own flat, or just, you know, sending it out there and hoping that it,
well, the one thing for sure, there's a lot of new music out there that's been made and that's now being played, so even like the next year is going to be really exciting, because yeah. because we undoubtedly seem to be going through a summer of love again now, because it's like, you know, we're out of lockdown and there still is, you know, going to be a bit of a roller coaster, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's definitely back.
Mm-hmm.
The industry's back. And I think that's just that's giving people like a massive creative spark.
Yeah, yeah. And what's your kind of diary looking like for the rest of the year? Are you...
Well, I mean,
up.
Do you know what? Like, yeah, I think because of the way things have been, it's kind of hard to plan too far ahead. Mm-hmm. We do not know what's going to happen, let's face it, in a few weeks.
Yeah.
But my, you know, like in the more near future, like my trip here, I've got some great gigs I'm really excited about coming up for the next few weeks, like Pike's pop up at Marston Park, mm-hmm. Elro Festival, where we're co-hosting a stage with Disco and doing the afters at Egg,
yeah.
and Homo Electric, my disco family from Manchester, and I haven't played for them up in Manchester for many years,
yeah.
and that's at Manchester Gay Pride. I'm super excited about that,
yeah.
and then I've got my own event on West Side Story, which is every carnival. We know carnival's not on, but I think it's going to be a big weekend anyway.
Yeah.
So that's at the Mason's Arms with Justin Robertson, Demi Requisimo, Nancy Noyes, Lula Franks, Mr. Doris, Sloth Boogie.
Yeah.
Amazing lineup.
Yeah.
So that's like 2.5 weeks away. I can't quite believe it. And, you know, back into Ibiza with the flash parties, Flashlight, which we do on the Thursdays, which came something we started last year because we couldn't do flash, so Flashlight seemed like a nice way, and it kind of looks great on paper.
Yeah.
But there is a flash party on the Friday the 24th of September, which we're going to announce some exciting UK guests for as yeah. well. And then hopefully we get to roll through into October with the season there.
Yeah,
I think it could be an amazing September and October in Ibiza this year.
Definitely, I think so. I think you're going to see, you mentioned almost a summer of love. That summer of love can almost turn into the autumn, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then I'll be back end of October, beginning of November, doing an event with Disco again. Mm-hmm. We are taking over Colours in Hoxton. Mm-hmm. We're just about to soon announce that with the lineup. It's great.
Yeah.
And there'll be other things happening around Halloween that I'm in talks with as well. So yeah, that's the kind of loose plan for the next few months ahead.
Awesome. And you know, there's so many different parties going on, like that you're involved with there. How would you describe your sound when you're playing as a DJ? Do you have a particular, like a first love, this is what I love to play? Or you mentioned as well about how, you know, it can be good to play a Balearica set, it can be good to play a disco set, a funk set, or are you just happy to play anything?
I'm probably a disco and house boy at heart. Mm-hmm. I've always said that I wish I was 18 in 78 in New York. But I was 8 in Manchester.
But then you were 18 and 88 in
but
Manchester.
But then I was, yes, exactly. Particularly these most recent years and with the pandemic and having to kind of not be, to have to find more chilled out music or, you know, like not as focused on house music as much.
Yeah.
I've definitely really enjoyed, you know, I've been listening to like Fat Phil Cooper, mm-hmm. who lives in Ibiza, who's a mate, and he's just an amazing
We've
radio show
for this
every week.
As well.
Yeah, and so like, you know, just listening to people like that who, and they've been educating me on that more chill out mm-hmm. kind of vibe, which I've always loved. But I'd say I'm probably happiest playing a jacking acid house, deep house set.
Yeah.
And that's probably where I'm at my happiest.
Yeah. And that hasn't changed over time?
No. No. And you know, that whole thing of there's so many categories now of dance music, and it's all house.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's all house. You know, I know it sounds cliche, but it is. And you know, there are subgenres of it, of course, but you know, disco led into house and all these other, whether it be dubstep or grime or techno or whatever, basically came from house.
Yeah.
And house came from disco.
Yeah. And, you know, house is stolen from so many different genres that there are all these like branches that feed into that.
Yeah. And that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to Sophie actually before, who owns the boat pod that we sat on, about genre things. And what I love about it as well is when you hear a track that you've heard a million times, but then when you're out sometimes you might hear the original of where that sample came from, for that track that you love, and then that rabbit hole opens.
Yeah. And you're like, wow, I didn't realize it came from there. Yeah. And how clever, you know, clever sampling as well, which always still intrigues me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Just taking those little nuggets. And right, okay, we've been talking for a good while now. You were really good at getting me your playlist choices. We're now talking about tracks and things. So we always like to get our guests to choose 5 tracks based on different themes to put into our Spotify Perfect playlist. And yeah, I mean, it's a huge, massive, long list now. It's almost, I think it's over 24 hours long because everyone's contributed 5 tracks to it.
Right.
So it's a great listen and some real left field choices in there. And we always want to start off with a catalyst track. You know, I know it's really difficult to nail these things down to one.
That one's
choice.
Not so difficult for me, because I remember where I was, what I was wearing.
Uh-huh.
I was actually in the Hacienda. I believe it was like probably early 1987s. I was 16. I was with my friend John Donaghy, and we were looking over the, we were stood up looking over the balcony, over the dance floor, and this track came on. And it was just like, because then it was very more quite student like, and the music was a lot more mixed genre. But this track came on, and I was just like, what is this? This sounds amazing. And it was actually Steve Silt, Hurley Jack Your Body. And I think it was probably before it hit the charts. I think it was just before it hit the charts. So it wasn't like, because I would have heard it in the charts and I hadn't.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this sounds like the future.
Yeah.
And I was instantly like, smitten with it.
Yeah.
And so that was definitely a catalyst track for me, which is quite an obvious one, but at least I was, you know, at least it's a good story.
Absolutely. And, you know, for the first time for you to hear that in its proper environment, in the wild, in a club.
I don't think that most of the people in the club kind of realised either, though, because it was so new.
Yeah.
And it had probably, there'd probably been like a James or a Smiths track played before that.
Wow.
So they probably didn't,
you
know, people, I knew there was a feeling in the club of like, oof, what's this? Mm. And I definitely, and the reason I say I remember what I was wearing, because I was wearing a denim jacket with a beret hat with coloured paperclips, a bit Boy George, kind of look, with coloured paperclips coming off the beret, dangling down onto the pocket of the denim jacket. Absolutely awful. Don't know what I was thinking, but I remember that's what I was wearing at the time.
Fashion choices direct from WH Smith. Amazing.
Yeah. Stationary fashion.
A floor filler choice. Can you, firstly, actually, can you remember what you've chosen, or do you want me to tell you what they are as we go?
Tell me.
Okay. So a floor filler you've chosen, and very specific as well.
Oh, Madonna.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Shep Pettibone mix.
Well, it's that 12-inch that he's done of Into the Groove, which is on the remix album.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, like, I loved her, and, you know, I went to see her Blonde Ambition. I went to see her about four times, actually. But that Blonde Ambition tour in 90 was just amazing. Into the Groove's a great pop record. But that 12-inch mix is just really special, how it kind of breaks down and then goes into that piano after about 6-7 minutes.
Yeah.
And when I used to run a party with Kelly Love and Chris Bones called Black Rabbit in and around London. But we also had a residency at Space in Ibiza at We Love in the El Salon room on Sundays, I think for two summers. And we used to, basically, we used to do a thing called the Gay Off, where at the kind of end of the night, we would like try to out-gay each other with what we would play. I know it sounds a bit stupid, but I mean, and very often I'd be the only actual gay DJ out in them, but it was quite fun.
Yeah.
And I remember the closing party, the last one we did, which was the September, and it's about 10 years ago, and we were having the Gay Off, and I think it was Lucas C from Hot Natured and Bones and a few of us. It was a right old rum bunch in the DJ box having this Gay Off, and I put that on from beginning to end, and it absolutely slayed the room, and the room was just like, and they were like, you've won. and it's just a really special record.
It's a special record. Is it your favorite Madonna track?
That's difficult because, you know, I have got quite a few. I absolutely love Justify My Love as well. But I'd say it's probably my favourite. That's a difficult question.
I love Into the Groove. I love Bionic.
And Borderline, that Butch LaButch remix of Borderline, which was an end of the night record at Savage for me quite a lot as well, you know. But I think Into the Groove just wins it.
Yeah, you mentioned Borderline. I was just about to say, have you heard that Butch LaButch?
Yeah, like I said, it was an end of the night record for me at Savage quite often, going back about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, just the layers. Oh, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about that track. That's great. Okay, a Sunsetter. Can you remember what you've chosen? It is. You're probably good friends with him. He lives in Ibiza.
Don't tell me what I bought because I can't remember.
Nightmares on Wax.
Oh, yeah, yes. Les Nui, which it's just of that chill out Balearic genre. It's one of my favourite tracks. Mm-hmm. It's something I'd never get bored of listening to.
Yeah,
and it's funny because there's a funny story associated with that as well. Was that one year in Ibiza, I was with my partner at the time, Chris, and we'd been out late, and we were sleeping in the lounge because it was so hot we couldn't even be in the bedrooms. It was so hot. I was sleeping in the lounge, and that was playing. I remember like falling asleep and the wind blowing like the curtains through the door. And I also remember someone being in the room, and I thought it was a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I did wake up properly, we'd been robbed.
Oh, no.
And actually, it had been somebody who just walked in
and
grabbed wallets, watches, money, everything off the table. Oh, and as, but I do remember, as I, so it's not exactly a great memory associated with it, but as we were falling asleep, I remember it was that that was kind of, you know, lullabying me to sleep. Yeah, it's a great track.
Just that edge of awareness. Yeah, it's got that, that in-betweeny type feeling, like you say. Between.
Yes, it has. And it's called Les Nuits, so it's also that kind of like, you know, going into the night. Actually, that was probably going into the day, but what the hell.
Cool. Right, a tearjerker.
Yeah, the tearjerker one is a sad story, but, you know, it's a valid one. It's... Barefoot in the Head by a man called Adam. John Donaghy, who I mentioned earlier, I was in the Hacienda with. So he and a guy called Suddy were called together, and they had a big record called Hardcore Uproar. And they, John was like one of my best mates from school.
Yeah.
And they had this big record in 90, signed to FFRR. And they went to Ibiza in September 1990. And I really wanted to go, but I couldn't afford to go. And they were doing a gig at Coup, which is now Privilege, with Sasha and 808 State, like a proper big concert.
Yeah.
And they got killed. They got knocked off their motor. Well, John and Emma didn't go on the tour bus. They went on their motorbike and they got killed by a drunk driver. And it was devastating for me and all of our friends. Yeah. And actually, the night before they went to Ibiza, my partner at the time was a hairdresser, and Emma came over and had her hair cut, and I'd just seen the video to Barefoot in the Head on MTV, and it's filmed on the beaches in Ibiza.
Yeah.
And I get goosebumps every time I talk about it. And I said to Emma, like, well, wow, have you seen and heard this? And she was like, oh my God, I love it.
Yeah.
And then the next day they rang me from Manchester Airport and they were like, can't believe you're not coming, like kind of half bragging and half winding me up. And a few days later they were gone. So it's very difficult for me to listen to that song still, but it's also a man called Adam and Sally and, you know, and all those guys, they're amazing. And they've got strong roots in Ibiza, and the whole Balearic scene as well. I've told Sally that story and what that means to me and stuff as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely a tearjerker.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us. Really appreciate that. It's a beautiful, beautiful record. We have interviewed Sally as well for this. And we did talk about them creating that record and just the vibes they wanted to bring to it. It is a stunning piece of work and just, has a real kind of sense of place as well, definitely.
It certainly does.
After that, we've got to pick a last tune.
Oh yeah. I think a floor filler and the last tune are the most difficult choices.
Yeah.
I picked Sylvester. Not You Make Me Feel Right Mighty Real, which is probably which is an amazing record, but Do You Want to Funk, which I love them both. They're very, very different. Do You Want to Funk for me, just I don't know. For me, that version of like high energy disco, that's where I want to be. You know, it's an amazingly produced record. It's got such fantastic energy, and when I did play the Terrace, when I closed the Terrace at Space for the first time, which was a big gig for me back in about 12 years ago, for We Love, and I ended on that, and so I actually. I kind of like stopped my set and then kicked that in.
Yeah.
And I just remember like it had gone really well anyway, but it just went up a notch. It went up a gear to stratospheric, you know. And even Darren Hughes, who used to run We Love, just jumped up on the podium in front of me and went absolutely crazy, which I'd never seen before. And it was a proper moment. And it's a genius song.
Awesome. Yeah, to have that confidence when you were at that gig to know this, I'm going to play
it's
this.
It's like years before, I used to play at Bora Bora a lot, and I actually ended one night there on You Make Me Feel after just playing like a whole lot of house records. And again, it just, the place kind of exploded, but you didn't really hear that many people taking those chances.
Yeah.
But I think that's, you know, that's part of the disco boy and probably part of the, you know, being gay and all of that. Just, you know, I think that all of that can make an interesting arrangement or choices. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it does take some balls to actually stop and say, okay, I'm going to play something now. Here you go. And it'd be the right track.
Yeah, yeah, and it'd not be a massive, obvious house record to end on as well.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Right, well, it's final question time. We always wrap up with the last question, which is, you know, we are House Culture. This is the House Culture podcast. You know, we're very much interested in the whole culture of the scene, which we've kind of talked around anyway. Particularly the scene of house. What has this thing called house given you in your life? You know, is it a career? Is it friends? Is it, you know, how would you define it? And when you look back on it,
interesting question. I think it's given me all of that. I think it's given me a passion. Definitely met friends through being, you know, in clubs and festivals. Being able to feed myself, keep a roof over my head. And again, like that's, you know, that's not always been a given, because if you are totally freelance, as we all know, it's have its ups and downs. But definitely house is a feeling, and the feeling is good.
That is the perfect place to stop, I think. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
House Culture.
What a top fella, right? I loved hearing about Guy's journey from new romantic to a super stylish Hacienda regular, right the way through to where he is now with his ever-growing DJ bookings and exciting talent roster. I can't wait to see what the man does next. And as you heard, there are quite a few crossovers in there with people that we have already had guests on the podcast. So if you really want to make the most of those connections, make sure you have a listen to our episodes featuring former Hacienda regular Buckley, Manumission founder Dawn Hindle, musical nomad and all-round great guy Fat Phil Cooper, and one half of a man called Adam, Sally Rogers. You also heard Guy select some incredible tracks for our ever-growing House Culture Perfect playlist that you can find on Spotify. This epically eclectic selection of tunes has taken submissions from every single one of our previous podcast guests. Seek it out by searching for House Culture Perfect playlist on Spotify, stick it on shuffle, and turn it up loud. With that as your soundtrack, please help support this podcast by loving, liking, tweeting, sharing, and rating or reviewing us on Apple. We've had some fantastic feedback already, so if you say something good, it will not only help us to continue to create these episodes that you love listening to, it could also get you a shout out on a future one as well. This time around, I'm shouting out to the one and only Sophie Callis, founder of the Boat Pod Studio, where this conversation was recorded. I want to thank you loads for letting us use your space, and I can't wait to be back in there soon. And if you want to join us at House Culture from wherever you might be in the world right now, please hit up our Instagram feed at HouseCultureNet or follow the hashtag TrueHouseCulture. Not only will we get fully informed about the podcast, you'll also get connected with other beat lovers from across the globe. And finally, if you want to get in touch with me, Matt Rouse, you can do it directly on Instagram at DJ Matt Rouse. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. See you next time.
House Culture.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.